Hi, for those who don't know me, my name is Ed. Welcome to my podcast, which I'm calling Checked Out. The purpose of this podcast is predominantly one thing, and that's to build a community of listeners that likes to read meaningful books that have stood the test of time. And I should add to that that there are two more reasons why I think I would like to start a podcast in this way. The first is that I've always wanted to start a podcast. I often listen to podcasts, I often listen to audiobooks, and I believe the platform offers a lot when it comes to being able to get an idea across to lots of people in a way that's perhaps a bit more formal than just a conversation, but allows for more feedback on views and experiences. And perhaps that doesn't make too much sense right now, but hopefully moving forward, you'll see what I mean by that. And the second reason is more in the interests of my friends, who often have to listen to me talk about books and the ideas of books all the time. So I believe that it's probably, in this day and age, more socially acceptable for me to talk to a microphone about Russian neo-existentialism than it is to talk my friend's ears off at a cafe. So those are predominantly the three reasons why this podcast exists. Before we get into the substantive of this podcast, I would just like to say that if you are interested in listening to more of these podcasts in the future, do subscribe to this podcast. It's available for now on Apple Podcasts and Anchor. And in the future, if you're an Android user or you just prefer to, Spotify will be an alternative. So be sure to subscribe on whatever platform you would like to listen to these episodes on. I'll also say, just looking forward into the future, I would love to have a YouTube channel to sort of complement this podcast, where I can sort of sit down, it's a bit more face-to-face, and talk about perhaps books that have made an impact on my life that I'm not necessarily reading now or have read recently, amongst other topics and videos. So be sure to look out for that. I will be talking about that more in future podcasts once I have a camera and a microphone and that's all set up. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope to see you on the next one. So this week I haven't been super inspired and I don't have a lot of time to record this episode. So what I've decided to do is go through three books that I've read since the beginning of this year, so from January to now, which is March at the time of recording. But just a quick rundown, I've read about 10 books this year, and that includes books I'm reading currently. So we're talking On the Shortness of Life by Seneca, which I'll be talking about today, Meditations, Marcus Aurelius, Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene, Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb, Algorithms to Live by Brian Christian, Essentialism by Greg McOwen, fantastic book. Principles by Ray Dalio, another very good one. 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, which is by my favourite author, Yuval Noah Harari. And currently I'm listening to Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I've spoken to people who finished the book and they've thought it was pretty life-changing. So definitely a book to check out if you're interested in stuff like that. And then the current book that I'm reading on my Kindle is The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Nietzsche. Oh, Nietzsche. Sorry, Fyodor Dostoevsky, rather. Close enough, some might say. But that's turning out to be really good. I tend to not read a lot of fiction. And The Brothers Karamazov, if you don't know, is a fictional book. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think I've forgotten actually how interesting fiction books can be. So I'm looking forward to talking about that, but not in this episode. In this episode, as I said, I'd like to talk about three of those books. And the books that I've chosen, based on their merits and also perhaps the opposite of that, are quite interesting books nonetheless. The first one is On the Shortness of Life by Seneca the Younger. The second one is called The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. That's quite a recent book that came out, I think last year, but it could be this year, I might be mistaken. And then Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, which I thought was fantastic and I can't wait to talk to you about it. So yeah, those are the three books I'll be talking about today. I'll just be giving a small rundown about what the books are about, what the central ideas are, and then a little bit about my experience with the books, and yeah, whatever else comes to my mind. So hopefully you find it interesting. In future weeks, I would love to talk to some of my friends who've read the same books, have sort of a sit-down conversation with them while recording it. I'd love to talk about certain themes of books or certain motifs that have come up in multiple books I've read. There's lots of avenues that we could go down here with this podcast. It's early days. But for now, you're going to have to make do with me talking about three books that I've read this year. So let's go on to the first one, which is On the Shortness of Life by Seneca the Younger. My copy of Seneca's On the Shortness of Life is published by Penguin Books in a fantastic series they call Penguin Great Ideas. So before getting into the book, I should tell you about this series. It's 100 books long, divided into five sort of seasons of 20 books. And each book is essentially, you know, an extract from a text. They're usually about 100 pages, an extract from a text or a full text, within which was an idea that more or less changed the way people at the time saw the world. So in the first season's case, you begin with On the Shortness of Life by Seneca, which I'll talk about. You have Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. You have The Communist Manifesto, which I've just purchased. You have On the Vindication of the Rights of Women by Mary Wollstonecraft and Common Sense by Thomas Paine, both of which I've also purchased. Niccolo Machiavelli's The Prince, I've also purchased that one. And you have others which might be more known. So you have George Orwell, you have Albert Camus. In future seasons, you have Nietzsche, Dostoevsky, I'm not getting his name right today, Kierkegaard, amongst other authors. And I think Orwell, Albert Camus, a few of them actually make multiple appearances, Nietzsche, throughout the 100 books, which they compiled in the 2000s. I highly recommend taking a look at them. They're usually very cheap because the texts aren't protected by copyright. So, you know, you're sort of just paying for the paper copy, but the covers are beautiful and the spines all go together. They're all color-coded. It's fantastic. You should check it out, I think, if you haven't already. So moving on to Seneca. Seneca was a Roman Stoic philosopher that lived during the 1st century AD, I believe. And the copy that I have on the Shortness of Life is actually a compilation of three essays by Seneca. The first is On the Shortness of Life. The second is Consolation of or to Medea. And the third is called On Tranquility of Mind. So what I would like to do is go through each essay and just give you my thoughts on them. So On the Shortness of Life, it's a message that we hear commonly today. It's that your time is valuable. And the flip side of that is that it seems to be a human tendency that we tend to not acknowledge this until it's too late. We tend to waste our time. And the ways we waste our time, you know, are pretty shocking when it's laid out like this, as it is in On the Shortness of Life. So it talks about when we, you know, believing that we're adhering to some important social obligation, say yes to a whole bunch of things that we don't need to say yes to. And then we go out and do them. We've wasted a whole day. We feel terrible. We feel like it should have been important that we did it at the time, but in hindsight, that time could have been used better. And if you want to hear or listen to or read a book, I listened to it on Audible, a book on the very same sort of wavelength, I would highly recommend Essentialism by Greg McKeown, which talks all about this. And I believe it was Greg, his story is, you know, one of his children was being born and he ran off to the office to sit in on a presentation which he believed was really important and missed the birth of his child. So that's a very extreme example, but that's more or less what On the Shortness of Life is about. And it uses some fantastic examples. So it talks about, I suppose, what would have been contemporary people at the time. So, you know, Julius Caesar and other Romans, even some ancient Greek philosophers, I believe, or generals, perhaps Alexander the Great, I can't remember. I'm getting my dates all mixed up. But he talks about, say, Julius Caesar, who often said, oh, you know, I can't wait for the day until I retire, you know, until I can enter a period of leisure. And of course, it never happened because, as we know, Julius Caesar got shanked in the Senate and, you know, before he could retire. And what Seneca says is, well, Julius Caesar had everything, you know, like except this one thing he wanted. And he could have had that at any time, but he was blinded by this human tendency to waste it, to not acknowledge the value of time. And he outlines a number of these stories. They're quite fantastic. I highly recommend reading it. It may sound, and I should say this, it may sound like a thing that your mom or dad or grandparents would say to you over and over again while then telling you to, you know, get on with schoolwork or go to university or do something you don't want to do. Coming from Seneca, it sounds unlike anything I've ever heard. And believe me, I've heard it all. I listened to the Tim Ferriss podcast. He is I think he helps publish Ryan Holiday's books, which are on the Stoics. You know, they bring in the Stoical lessons from Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and Epicurus. But I don't believe that I've ever heard these lessons, this one about the shortness of life and the future ones about grief and about living. I've never heard them expressed in the way that Seneca expresses them. And that could be the translation, of course, that I'm reading. But to me, For many of these important ideas, I think it comes down to exposing yourself to the idea in as many different forms as possible. And for me, this lesson on the shortness of life, on the value of time, imprinted itself in my brain after reading this book, despite, you know, me having been exposed to this message since I was a child. So if you feel like you might be like me, that's too bad. But also, I highly recommend reading this book because this is definitely the correct format of the message, if that makes sense, to plug it into someone like, into the head of someone like me, I believe. The second text, Consolation of Medea, is, I think, my favorite of the three. It's kind of an homage to motherhood, in a sense. Seneca, if you don't know, was exiled from Rome. I can't remember who by, I think it was by Nero, who I'm pretty sure he was a tutor of at some point. Nero or his successor later ordered Seneca to kill himself, which is a whole different story with a whole different set of essays. But in this case, Seneca was exiled from Rome, and his mother, who had already lost, I believe, her husband, her grandchild, her father, all these terrible things had happened to her. Now she's lost her child because, of course, in the ancient world, exile was more or less death, definitely socially, and that could be awful for the family that was left behind. So Seneca writes her this letter basically saying, I'm a Stoic, you know, I'm going to go read, I'm going to enjoy my leisure, carrying on from the first one, I'm going to be a Roman about this, and, you know, in his words, be a man about this, which I suppose is one thing I did notice and I should touch on in this text. It was written in the ancient sort of time where womanly, feminine characteristics were seen as inferior to masculine characteristics. Not to say that all women had predominantly feminine characteristics and all men had predominantly masculine. It adopted a more classical understanding of the words man and woman to mean quite different things. And as a man, you could be womanly. As a woman, you could be manly. That didn't necessarily correlate with your gender, perhaps. But, you know, of course, in other aspects of Roman life, including citizenship, it did manifest itself to be important. But I should preface with that. But Seneca's there writing this letter, and perhaps what I got out of it the most was the way that he consoled his mother. And he says it in a quote, and I did have it on me before, and it goes something like this. It's, I chose to conquer your fear, not cheat it. So I told you about all those horrible things that happened to his mother because Seneca tells his mother about all the horrible things that happened to his mother. He lays it all out there in his, you know, 5-page essay saying, these are all the horrible things that have happened to you. Look at them, read them, you know, cry about them, because these are terrible things, but the important thing is you endured through them. And by looking at them and accepting that this is the reality of life, you overcame them, you conquered them. You didn't go around them and cheat them and or kick them down the road to be dealt with later. And from what I understand, this is quite sort of a Jungian sort of psychotherapy approach to dealing with grief. And in this case, I believe Seneca achieved the goal. The lesson is very clear, and it's imprinted on the page that you need to confront your problems, bear your cross, as it were. And I think for that reason, this letter was by far my favorite. I haven't read a lot of great letters. There are whole books on great letters between people throughout all of history, but this one in particular really stuck out to me. And I feel that this lesson about adopting your problems and taking them on was very important to read. And again, the exact right format for me to adopt it in my mind, perhaps not for you, but if you, again, feel like you might approach learning like I do, then this might be the right book to give a read. And of course, it only takes 2 hours or less. It's about 100 pages long. The third essay is on tranquility of mind. And it's been a while since I've read this book, but I think the essence of this essay was the difference between living and dying, and more specifically, what it means to exist and what it means to live. And I think this can be expressed pretty clearly in a quote I do remember from the book quite vividly, and it's it goes something to the effect that most old men, again, men in this context means people generally, most old men have nothing to show that they have lived but for their age. So I suppose what he's generally saying, and that is, everyone lives an extended period of time or exists for an extended period of time. Not everyone lives. Not everyone has experienced life. And I suppose what he attempts to say is that you only live when you pursue something that is personally meaningful to you. And in Seneca's mind, this was public service, this was joining the army, this was becoming a contributing citizen in Roman society, which of course women couldn't do, but as a man, these were seen as the things that you could do. As a woman, you were seen to be fulfilling this meaning in life as being a mother, being a matriarch in your family. So in Seneca's mind, there were predefined paths. I suppose in my sort of more postmodern neoliberal understanding, whatever you would call the environment that I've been brought up in, very different to ancient Rome, we are sort of taught that you can make up your own meaning in life, and that meaning is not necessarily prescribed to you, although, of course, that depends on who you're reading. So I believe it was quite easy for me to incorporate those principles, regardless of what Seneca believed was important, into my life. Find meaning and then act in congruence with that meaning. Live a life. Don't just exist. This is how I approached this, the task of absorbing the lessons of this book into my own understanding. And you can definitely get in contact with me if you disagree, or if you took something else out of this book, if you do get a chance to read it or have read it. I think for me, the lesson from Tranquility of Mind was perhaps the most important of the three. I enjoyed Consolation of Medea, but I think the lesson of Tranquility of Mind is very important. I'm going through university at the moment, and it sort of realigned me. It was like, what the hell do you want to do with your life? You know, make sure you find that out and then act on it. Live the life that you want to live. And again, and I've said it twice now, but if you feel like your mind is constructed in the way that mine is, in that there's only certain ways that information can really penetrate me at a deeper level, this book is the book to read, because these three lessons that are of utmost importance, I have read and heard constantly over the last 4 or 5 years from real people, from, you know, authors, from fictional characters in books. None of it has stuck to me like it has with Seneca's On the Shortness of Life, this compilation by Penguin Books. So I highly recommend reading it. And I suppose on a similar wavelength about what it means to be human and what it means to live, the next book I would like to talk about is Robert Greene's The Laws of Human Nature. Robert Greene's book is very long. I believe the hard copy is actually close to 650 pages. My Kindle version was close to 800, I think. It took me a good 2 or 3 weeks to read, and that's not necessarily to degrade the speed of my reading. I was skim reading large sections of this book, but it was it was just the thought of picking it up and reading more of this derivative, bland writing in a way, which is a very weird description to have for Robert Greene. Perhaps the content was bland. The writing style is very dramatic. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, The Laws of Human Nature is essentially a book that raises the proposition that as humans, we have a certain set of characteristics or tendencies or behaviors that arise during times of uncertainty. Remember the word uncertainty because that comes up in the next book that we're going to talk about, which I think actually achieves a very similar thing to this book in a much more effective way. But keeping on with Robert Greene, you can tell I loved this book, can't you? He attempts to state a rule. That's what he does. Robert Greene, actually, this is his thing. He'll state a rule that he's sort of taken. Imagine like every human idea, you throw it into a bucket and leave it for 3 hours, and then like a little bit, you know, all the good stuff, just the cream rises to the top, and then you just scoop off the top of the cream and use that. That's what Robert Greene does. He gets all these historical stories, anecdotes, texts, writings, you know, Seneca, Aurelius, Epicurus, those guys, puts it all in a bucket, waits for the cream to rise, and then just scoops off the top, and bang, there you have a law of human nature. So if that analogy worked for you, that's fantastic. He'll state a rule, and it will generally be pretty insightful, but yes, again, derivative. Nothing you might not have heard before if you've read any of the classic books from which they've been derived. Then he'll does what he does absolutely better than anyone I've ever read. He'll retell a historical story that serves as evidence of the rule in action. And I should say, to his credit, he does this masterfully. In every book he's ever, or that I've ever read, I read The 48 Rules of Power, and I believe I've read half of his book Mastery, and perhaps I think I did also listen to about a quarter of his book Seduction. They're all written the same way. He states a rule, historical example, and then talks about the exceptions of the rule and sort of goes into a bit more of his own thing. And the stories are just fantastic. He talks about Coco Chanel entering fashion, you know, her history with the Nazi Party, creating Chanel No. 5, her famous perfume, for those who don't wear it. Fantastic story. Talks about Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson, who I knew nothing about, but it talks about his ascent through the Democratic Party and what he did and how he manipulated people. You know, very, I don't know if you've seen Vice, it felt very similar to that. You know, like this fantastic story. Fantastic stories about very interesting people who you want to know about. You might even know about them, but you learn something new or you still are entertained. The problem is that I would often find myself skipping or skim reading entire sections of this 650-page long book just to read those parts. That was it. That's all I needed to really get out of this book, I felt. Robert Greene's analysis of the rules is, in my opinion, extremely dull. And perhaps I was a little biased because I just read Sapiens, which in December, which was is easily my favorite book that I've ever read. I read Homo Deus, again by Yuval Noah Harari. Again, maybe the second favorite book I've ever read. I'd read Fooled by Randomness by Nassim Taleb. We got another Nassim Taleb book coming up. Fantastic book. One of the best I've ever read, again. And so then I came onto The Laws of Human Nature, and I was thinking, you know, this is the caliber of ideas and books. This is who I'm reading now. And then I read Robert Greene, remembering him, you know, back when I was 13, I think I read 48 Rules of Power, and thinking, this is a good author. And I think I was about a chapter and a half in, I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to read this book anymore. It's 650 pages long. This is too much. Like, just bring me these cool little historical stories. And I tried to narrow down, just for this podcast, what it was that I didn't like about this book, because I know a lot of people are going to like this book. So I'm by no means saying don't read it, because I feel like the majority of people will actually like this book. It's just I didn't. And I think a huge part of it is firstly that Robert Greene writes as though he is Niccolo Machiavelli, if that makes sense. If you don't know who Niccolo Machiavelli was, I don't really know either. He was a Florentine diplomat who basically founded this whole realpolitik, Bismarckian political sort of cloak and dagger well, not founded it, but he founded the study of it. Fantastic sort of story there. And he wrote the book The Prince, which is about leaders and very cutthroat leaders and what you have to do to maintain power and what you have to do to get power and gain respect and seduce people. And from what I gather, the book is written in a very dramatic way. Well, Robert Greene writes in a very dramatic way as well, and he tends to talk about very similar concepts. You know, do this to subdue your enemies, do this to win over friends, do this to seduce people, do this to master these skills that you need to succeed in whatever field you're pursuing. It's very dramatic, and I don't think I would have a huge problem if the chapters were written in a very clinical manner. You know, this is a rule, this is an example, this is what happened, you know, this is how it could be applied, this is what the research has showed. I know all of that's in the book. The problem is, Robert Greene writes as though he is Machiavelli, and that's not good, because he wasn't a Florentine diplomat who did all these amazing things at the top level of the Italian political hierarchy. He was a PhD author. And this really shows, I feel. This actually impacts the book a lot more than I thought it would. And most people, I think, reading this book are going to really enjoy how dramatic it is and how interesting it is. They might not find the actual rules themselves interesting, but for me, it was flipped around, and I found this book extremely derivative and quite boring. And I hate to say that about Robert Greene, because I know I really enjoyed 48 Rules of, Laws of Power. 48 Laws? 48 Rules of Power? But yeah, it just wasn't for me, this one. And that all being said, I think you should, if you get the chance, if the book's on sale, if you can buy a book on Kindle, get this book. Give it a read, at least those historical sections. I think they're very interesting. I was originally going to say a lot more harsher things about this book, but I think I did finish it in the end. I did finish all 650 pages, so it can't have been that bad that I didn't want to. But take it with a grain of salt. It's very dramatic, and I think that if you really want those lessons, read the original books. Read Seneca, read Aurelius, you know, like, I don't think it's necessary to read a book like this if you are willing to put in the time to read the original authors themselves. So with that said, let's get into the third and final book, which I would say is up there in the top five favorite books that I've ever read, and that is Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. Taleb's book is his magnum opus. That's how he describes it. The core book in a series of books he's called Inserto, which includes a number of books. I haven't read all of them. I have read Fooled by Randomness, which is a book on how the human mind is sort of tricked by numbers or purely empirical evidence. And purely statistical evidence. It's very, very interesting. Sort of walks this line, talks about black swans, very similar concepts to the other books. His other books in Inserto are Skin in the Game, which talks about trusting politicians, professors, researchers who don't actually have skin in the game, aren't invested in the problems that they're claiming they can solve. And obviously that's a hugely important message. And the other book, here's a book called The Bed of Procrustes, which is named after a myth where an innkeeper has a perfectly sized bed, and when someone sleeps in it, he either stretches them to fit the size or he cuts their feet off to make them fit if they're too tall. It's a very interesting book. He includes a number of little anecdotes that make you think. I can't remember what the name is. It starts with A. I think it's Aphorism or something similar. Very interesting book. All included in this one set. And if you don't know, Nassim Taleb was a options trader. So he has an extremely developed sense of statistical understanding, as far as I can tell. And that can be a bit too much for me, because I am not good at maths. I'm studying law. You know, there's a reason for that, I suppose. I hope it's not always like that. I am trying. But some of Nassim Taleb's stuff go right over my head. But the core concept of the book I got, and I had the quote written down. I'm quite angry. I didn't bring it here when I started recording. So It's more or less that fragile things suffer when exposed to uncertainty. Anti-fragile things get better when exposed to uncertainty. So a good way to think of that is picture a spectrum. And on one side of the spectrum, you have fragile objects. So when a black swan event occurs, and I'll explain that in a minute if you don't understand it fully yet, an uncertainty occurs, a fluctuation occurs in the way things are going, fragile items tend to break. In the middle, you have robust items. So when something uncertain happens, a black swan event occurs, the item remains the same, usually up to a certain threshold, and then it does break. On the far right, you have anti-fragile objects. So when exposed to a certain degree of uncertainty, these items actually improve. So place everything on that spectrum: people, legal systems, nation states, economic systems, whatever have you. The author does it and applies it to all of them. And it's extremely interesting. I've never read a book like it, and I've never heard of ideas like it. And it could be that I haven't heard of these things because I haven't read many books on the sciences or maths spectrum. But Nassim Taleb is a very well-read person. He actually encourages his authors to read. See if I can get his name right this time. Dostoevsky. So I am reading Dostoevsky. So he does enjoy literature. He does enjoy fiction, but his expertise is in maths and mathematical philosophy. And this book kills it, in my opinion. If I could attempt to illustrate perhaps an example of the difference between anti-fragile and fragile, keeping in mind that Taleb actually invented the word anti-fragile. If you look it up on Google, you will only find references to him or his economic concept, which is anti-fragility. Very interesting. It's a word that I think if you've sort of just mulled it over in your head, you can understand that actually there's a lot of things around us that adhere to this sort of phenomena. You know, for example, when you work out, you tear and damage your muscles so that they get better, up to a certain threshold, of course. They don't get better if you do nothing under, you know, under certain conditions where your muscles know exactly what's coming, which is usually when they're still. You don't develop stronger muscles, do you? But when you expose your muscles to uncertainty, they get stronger, for example. And I think he does use that example with a bit more nuance in the book. I could be completely wrong on that angle. He could have, you know what, all I know, he could have said in the book, that was a terrible example to use and something else was the case. That might happen in my description of what he's trying to say. Another example would be the difference between the common law, like we have in Australia, or the civil law, which we have in Europe. I can say that because I was born in Europe. So we have in Europe civil law, although I was born in England, which is a common law system, so perhaps I can't say that. Anyway, in the common law, we have a high degree of what's called judicial discretion, which means the legislature passes an act, like a law, like you cannot drink drive, for example, otherwise you'll go to prison. And they generally don't define what driving is, they don't define what a vehicle is, they don't define what being drunk is necessarily. I think they do in this specific case, but say they don't on general. They just say what the law is. It's up for the courts to determine what each word means, what drive means, what a vehicle is, what being drunk is in some instances, of course, maybe not this specific example. This is an act, this is legislation. And when a case that has never come before the courts comes before the court has enough discretion to translate the law into a way that makes the system stronger so that it can deal with future threats, like, say, self-driving cars or indetectable drugs or perhaps different types of drugs that aren't qualified as alcoholic, and is malleable and is able to work around them so the legal system becomes stronger. In a codified system like that in, say, France, the acts that they produce are usually very specific. So if you said, you know, drink driving in a motorized vehicle, the act would actually describe exactly what those things were. And judges have very little ability to translate exactly the acts to suit unforeseen situations. So this can prove a problem. It's quite a fragile system. If a case comes before the courts that threatens the whole thing, they can't just safely incorporate it like they can, say, a common law system, theoretically. The system might have to, you know, completely reform itself overnight to adopt new principles that would bring about a just resolution to a particular situation. So that's a personal example. I might have described it completely wrong, but I think that sort of example does somewhat mirror what Nassim Taleb talks about in this book, Anti-Fragile. There's plenty of other fantastic lessons in it, mostly incorporated from the other books that he's written. So he does talk about skin in the game. He talks about why you shouldn't trust economists or pretty much any social scientist for that matter, which I find quite funny because I'm at the ANU and everyone here is studying, you know, international relations or psychology or sociology. And I think the general consensus by Taleb is that this scientific approach to these certain topics is pretty much just a farce. But again, you're going to have to read the book to really understand that. I think if you're studying an MBA, studying economics, studying the social sciences, you know, studying the civil law, blah, 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 this book could definitely rub you the wrong way. If you're hoping to get into politics, this book is almost certainly going to rub you the wrong way. Nassim Taleb believes that, or I believe, he says in the book that politicians going into politics should have their cap paid so that once they leave, they can't leverage their position in power to get a better job like they often do in America, which I found pretty reasonable. But, you know, he proposes lots of very interesting things, which many people might not agree with, and he proposes it in a very unedited, unadulterated way. By the way, Nassim Taleb, I don't believe, actually gets an editor for any of his books. They're still bestsellers. I guess that sort of shows you that he sticks to his message. He has skin in the game when it comes to book publishing. And yeah, I highly recommend this book. I would definitely say it's in my top five reads ever. I think Taleb's style can be a bit combative and a bit difficult to read, but if you actually understand what he's saying, it changes your whole worldview. And I can say that with absolute dead certainty. It's written without the clarity of, say, Seneca, but it's written with the pure, raw honesty that perhaps Robert Greene, for instance, if we're linking it back to the other texts that I've read, doesn't really incorporate into his book. And it feels just as dramatic, I should say, just as emotive. Not emotional, but emotive. And I think that's an important distinction to make there. So I highly recommend picking up, well, at least On the Shortness of Life and Anti-Fragile. If the laws of human nature appeals to you, I think it will appeal to many of you, depending on how many of you are listening to this. I highly recommend that as well. I'm going to end it here. So be sure to subscribe to this podcast. I would love to release one next week. I think I would like to talk to one of my friends about Anti-Fragile, one of my friends who knows a bit more about maths and statistics than I do, and sort of ask him, you know, what he took away from this book, which is so out of my field of my restricted field of expertise. And yeah, so be sure to get in touch. If you would like to, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. Stay tuned for YouTube videos to come out into the future. Let me know what I can improve. I know this wasn't a super inspired episode and it may have gone on a bit long. I think we're approaching close to 30 or 40 minutes. So if you've listened this way, listened to this podcast thus far, thank you for that. I am trying. I can only get better from here. And yeah, so I hope to see you next week and I'll see you then.